Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. A Kansas political scientist wonders what in the world is going on in Topeka these days. The president of the state Senate said she thought that the Kansas Open Records Act meant only that people get to see legislators vote in public. Well, there's a little bit more to it than that. We'll get an update in a little while. Later on this hour, Howard the Rancher is back from his homestead in Cottonwood Falls. He'll visit with us in the latest installment of our new series, 90 Mile View. But first up today, Jackson County Executive Mike Sanders is in the house to talk about his ongoing push for a regional rail system connecting the eastern suburbs of Jackson County with the downtown. It's a big, bold, ambitious plan that carries a big, bold, ambitious price tag of $650 million. Taxpayers would have to sign off on a 1 cent increase in the sales tax to get it done. Jackson County Executive Mike Sanders joins me right now. And Mike, always good to have you here.
Steve, thanks for having me.
Well, you've been talking about this plan for a while, Mike. What exactly needs to happen next to get this thing off the ground?
Yeah, great question. And we've been talking about this for a little over 2 years. Gone all over the county, frankly, all over the region to talk about this. But here's what I want to make sure everybody understands. Yeah. I mean, this is not a given that we're going to see this plan at any time on a ballot. It's not a certitude at this point. We have to reach, kind of step back a little bit. If you look
What's
at
your comfort level here?
Pretty good, but you just never know. I mean, we're negotiating right now with the different railroads, Union Pacific, the Kansas City Southern, the Kansas City Terminal.
For right away.
Absolutely, for right away. But beyond that, we wanted to take it one step further. It's not just access to those routes. We want to make sure that if this ever gets put on the ballot, the public knows exactly what this is going to cost. So we want to have construction cost, operating times, windows, all that laid out long in advance.
You don't want any surprises once this price tag is set and you go before the voters. You want to know what it's going to cost.
Absolutely. We'd have a contract with these different groups, and so if for some reason the construction exceeded that, I mean, we would have a contract, they would ultimately eat those costs. So there's a cap to the taxpayer liability, and when you would potentially vote on this, you'd know to a penny basically what this system's going to cost. Great lesson, and we learned. We toured the system in Denver. You know, great lesson there is they thought it was going to be $1 or $2 billion. It was $6 billion. I mean, you look at these lessons all over the United States where they think it's going to be one price tag, but when they ultimately really sit down and negotiate with the railroads, it's double or it's triple or regardless, it's more. Right? We didn't want that kind of
surprise.
Exactly, 24th hour mm-hmm. surprise. So we want all that laid out in advance. So there's a lot of detail work that has to be done. They have to give us access to the right of ways, which is a big issue for them. That's a 100-year business model decision. We want levels of service. We want costs. We want to know what it's going to cost to operate that system. So if that gets done and we put it on the ballot, the citizens would know exactly what it is they're voting for, and there would be no surprises 2 or 3 years down the road.
So give me a timetable here then, Mike. When likely will you be at a decision point to know whether, in fact, it's going to go before the voters or not?
Once again, good question. We think it's going to be sometime this March. And what I've said—
Oh, just in a couple months.
Absolutely. That we know the answer to the question. We'll know how those negotiations are going ultimately with the railroads. And I got to say, right now, they've been great to work with, whether it's the KCS or the Terminal or the UP. They've been wonderful to negotiate with. They really have, which I don't think it's everyone's experience with the railroads, but those are going very, very well. But I'm also realistic, and having done this quite a bit, I recognize that at any moment the negotiations can go south. There can be an easement issue, a right-of-way issue, a cost issue, some unforeseen circumstance. Business models can change. Federal statutes can pass. You know, this can all get derailed, no pun intended, fairly quickly. But we will know sometime early March, mid-March, late March, early April at the latest. And what I've said is, if we don't have a deal done in that time frame, we can't put this really legitimately on the ballot by August. November's not a realistic option. So for me, if we don't get this done, we've got this sort of artificial time frame, but it's based in practicality. If we don't get these negotiations completed by then, I think effectively from my end, that kills the project for the foreseeable future. We just won't have those deals in place. And my commitment's always been, without specific construction prices, specific right-of-ways, contract signed, I don't want to put this on the ballot.
But still, you're hopeful that it does get on the ballot, right? You put a lot of time into this. You think it's a good thing for the county.
Absolutely. I think it's an amazing thing for the county. I think it's an amazing thing for the city of Kansas City and this entire metropolitan area. If you look at cities, so let's go back and talk about the public policy reason, the why. You know, if we go anywhere in the world and you look at vibrant cities that are growing, they have rail mass transit and vibrant mass transit systems. That's the new model going forward. If we're going to be competitive in a global economy, and we're not competing with Omaha or Lincoln, even though we are, the primary competitors are these international cities. And how do we compete on a global stage? You know, what you find time and time again, anywhere you travel, anywhere you go, in these major metropolitan areas that are well-led, that are thriving, mass transit is one of the key components for global competitiveness going forward. That's moving goods, services, and people the most efficiently. But I tell you what else we're seeing, and this is really a unique demographic bubble. I'm going to talk like the ends of a barbell. You got two bubbles on each end of this demographic spectrum. You know, your generation millennials, the Xers, the millennials, for the first time in American history, well, since the 40s, you're seeing the number of people seeking driver's license dramatically going down year after year after year. Now, why is that? You know, freedom for them is not what it was, Steve, for you and I or many of the listeners. It isn't getting your license and being able to go to the mall and hang out at the theater.
Yeah.
It's the internet. It's the iPhone. It's that's your freedom. And so they, the millennials, say time and time again in any attitudinal poll you want to look at, they want to live in cities with mass transit. That's where they want to live. They're getting out of the car and getting on the internet, and they want to get on mass transit, and they're moving to cities. It's a much more fluid generation that they want to. They'll move anywhere in the United States or frankly the world where the jobs are, with an environment where they want to live. We see it time and time and time again. But another demographic shift. Let's go to the polar opposite. Let's look at baby boomers, the aging baby boomer generation. Demographically, they're beginning to make decisions. How do I live in a city? How do I go to the store? How do I live if I have to get out of my car or I want to get out of my car because I'm at a stage in my life where I can't do that? You know, in Kansas City today, you can't live in this city without a car. You have to be able to get around with your vehicle. You know, we need to create, look at those two demographic shifts, recognize what that is, recognize investing in that intellectual capital and what we have to do to be competitive. You know, not today, but 10, 20, 30 years from now. What are those generational investments that are going to have that impact?
We're visiting with Jackson County Executive Mike Sanders. So again, Mike, in a perfect world, you'll get your answer, whether about total costs and all your questions answered by early April at the latest. You want to take this to the ballot in August then?
Correct.
Why August?
Well, August, number one, I think you want to get this done fairly quickly. And, and I think if you look at time is of the essence, the other item that's occurring is, you know, we all see what's happening in Washington, D.C. And at some point, Kansas City is going to receive dollars from the federal and some of these pass-throughs to come back to our community. You know, since the 1950s, it was 1953 when the federal gasoline tax first passed, we've paid into that system. Eisenhower started it. And by the way, Ronald Reagan was the first president to propose, you know, funneling a huge margin of that money back for rail transit projects around the United States. So Ronald Reagan did that. However, we've sat here for generations and watched as we put every gallon of gas in our tank and those dollars go to D.C. We've watched those dollars go to cities all throughout the United States, St. Louis and Denver and Dallas and Chicago and Portland, and build these wonderful mass transit systems that drive economic development in their cities. The reality is that we all see what's going on in D.C. We see this giant cliff we're about to go over with regards to the budget. There aren't going to be many opportunities to bring these dollars back. That model is about to change. In the president's budget, with bipartisan support, there's $50 billion that's currently being proposed in addition to the normal FTFRA funding and this funding.
And you want a piece of that money.
Absolutely. And I think this may be the last time for the foreseeable future that we have a shot at bringing these dollars back to Kansas City.
So what that would mean would be that instead of spending $650 million, there'd be some margin, a decrease of that based on how much money we get from the feds.
No question. Now, we watched St. Louis basically get a dollar for dollar over in St. Louis, and the federal government built that rail system over there. This isn't the stimulus. Those days are gone. That's not going to occur here. What we have to do is do what other cities similar size to Kansas City have done. You know, have a local match, and that's when you begin to bring those dollars in. Show that you've got the local match, show that you've got a plan, and you bring those dollars back. If we don't have a plan in hand, really, within the next 8, 9, 10 months, the odds are that money's going to be gone. It's not going to come back in the foreseeable future, and anything we would do would be self-funded. The other item, and let me just say the other item that makes timing of the essence, it's the railroads, it's the model, but beyond that, it's the bond market right now. Interest rates are at a nationally historic low. The capacity for us in Kansas City to bond and to build a system like this is phenomenal today. It's not phenomenal potentially in a year or two.
You know, let's step back for a moment, Mike, and why don't you sell us on this plan? What exactly would it do? What's the grand vision here? Where would the rail routes run? How does it change lives?
This is a unique system in that, and there aren't enough time to go through all the nuts and bolts of this plan. So let me give you the 50,000 or 80,000 foot perspective. Commuter rail, this city grew around commuter rail. In the 1890s, when the tracks were laid down, cities formed. Independence, Blue Springs, Oak Grove, Lee Summit, formed around the railroads. And so that is just what occurred historically. And so what we're able to do with commuter rail in these corridors, commuter rail corridors that run all the way to the south through Grandview, South Kansas City South, Southeast Line, all the way through Raytown by the stadiums and down to Greenwood and south into Pleasant Hill and all the way east to Independence, Blue Springs, Oak Grove, Grain Valley, right? We line those agreements up. We line those railroad agreements up. We can touch every major metropolitan area in the greater Kansas City area, in Jackson County, I should say. And you could do it in other counties. I'm just talking about Jackson for now. We can also do it very economically because those routes are there. Those corridors are there. We can do it for pennies on the dollar of what you could do it for anywhere else. If we're talking 43 miles, which is generally what we're looking at with the first two routes, 43 miles of commuter rail. That's a little around 15, just by your estimate of $600 million. That's about $15 million per mile. You do this anywhere else, you could be $150 million a mile. So it's pennies on the dollar. Now, but the other issue becomes, okay, that's great, but why? Go back to global competitiveness. Go back to jobs. And that is, you know, you see employers wanting to live in areas, people wanting to live in areas with this type of mass transit. What you see everywhere in the world, and you know, once again, this isn't some ivory tower discussion. We're in some think tank in D.C. scratching our heads wondering, hey, what would the world be like if we had rail transit in a city? All you have to do is get in a car, get in a plane, and go anywhere in America, anywhere in the free world, and look at what rail transit does for those cities. Look what it's done in St. Louis and Denver. Jobs move in. People move in. It creates urban density, population density. It creates economic growth. You know, the national average is that for every dollar invested in rail transit, you get $3 to $4 in return in new economic activity in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else I see generates that kind of economic activity.
You're connecting all these outlying areas with what, downtown Kansas City, not Union Station, though. There's an issue there, right?
There is. Now, of course, ultimately, the goal would be to get to Union Station. The issue is, what do you do today? And right now, we're in and I've said this very publicly, getting to Union Station is a bit of a Gordian knot. You've got the trench, which is what you have to do to get to Union Station, is very full. All estimates from the railroads are that within 10 years, it's going to exceed capacity. They need that commercial traffic. We want that commercial traffic, which drives a lot of economic activity in our area. So the short answer is, how do you get there in the current business model and get there in a way that doesn't impact jobs in this community? So for now, we've got access potentially to the river market. But ultimately, the goal, Steve, you hit the nail on the head. It's getting to Union Station. That can be done. It just can't be done today, potentially, or tomorrow. It's going to take time to work that out. You know, but this is a project where we shouldn't be thinking about tomorrow or next month. Let's think about the next decade, the next generation, and what this does for us over 20, 30, 40 years.
Jackson County Executive Mike Sanders is our guest. We're talking about regional light rail in the metro. Lots of phone calls already. Mike Sanders comes, the phones light up. What's that all about? 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Our email address, update@kcur.org. Let's go to some phone calls right now. Greg from Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome, Greg.
Hi, good. Thank you for me.
Go ahead, Greg.
My question is, what does this, I understand the economic development, but what does this plan do to provide better mobility for populations in our communities, such as veterans, the disabled, elderly, people who really need that mobility?
How does this help the elderly and the disabled, Mike?
Well, without it, we don't do a very good job. You know, if you look at national average out of 100 cities in the United States, when the Brookings Institute or institutes do studies on transit, we are ranked 98th in the country, 98th in terms of national average out of 100 top cities. So we don't do a good job today. We don't really have an integrated mass transit plan. His question's spot on. There are so many components to this. It's like the layer of an onion, right, that there's so many layers to this. And he's spot on, whether it's veterans. You know, big issue with me, a veteran myself, right? And so looking at veterans, disabled veterans, what do we do to move people around? Paratransit, you know, the older generations, younger generation. This plan specifically creates an integrated, which we don't currently have, an integrated network of buses, of rail, of trails, right, that can move people all throughout this community. You know, my goal, and I think our goal would be to create a city where people that need access to paratransit, that you know, disabled veterans, anyone that needs this access to mass transit can make the decision to live in our city and not own a car, or not have to own a car, not have to drive. Right now, we don't have a city like that. This plan almost overnight could create that kind of city and create that kind of synergy and really energy and drive that kind of economic activity for our city.
You just used the word trails.
Yes.
That's part of this plan. Explain to us what that's all about.
It is. You know, part of this, you know, what you want to create as well, and you look at this broad scope of a plan, and once again, it's the layers of an onion. This is very big. It's not just about rail, although I think in many ways that's the sexiest portion of this. It's about integrated buses. You've got to move people to and from these areas. So how do you consolidate that? But another component is trails. You know, if I look at any thriving major metropolitan area, access to green mass transit and trails, specifically hiking trails, biking trails, that's imperative. If you want to bring the younger generation and families, and that sort of issue is huge for us, obviously, in this city, and we currently don't have it. So part of this plan as well, we're working with the city of Kansas City. And by the way, Sly James has been a phenomenal partner, continues to be so, as well as all the mayors of Jackson County. And I won't go through all of them because there's a bunch of them. But everybody's on board with this and creating an integrated network of trails where you could literally get on a trail in Kansas City or Independence or Blue Springs or Lee Summit, hook up to the Katy Trail and go anywhere in our city, go anywhere essentially in the state all the way to St. Louis. We don't have that option. When you create this type of energy, when you have this type of package together, you have these types of rail corridors, we can do it, but it's about the only way we're ever going to get that done.
Okay, Greg, thank you for the phone call. Let's go back to some phone calls, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Grover from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Well, I guess my question would be, how do we adjust for the lack of tax revenue from urban sprawl that are now vacant homes that are 20 or 30 miles away to help bring in this rail or light rail or bus transit It just seems like there's a lot of urban sprawl the last 20 years that we can't support in a light rail or a bus system. I'd love to be using a bus system for my children to get to and from the two colleges that they go to here in the metropolitan area, but there isn't any.
Grover, your point is we're so spread out. How economically feasible is some of this, if I hear you right?
Right, exactly. I mean, because we're going to lose tax revenue with the downward turn of the market on housing, which will mean we won't have a lot of that that tax revenue in the market. It's a two-phase. You know, you've got a declining tax revenue base, and we're wanting to spend money for this. We need it, but it's spread out so far that it's going to actually cost us more to do it.
Yep, I got your point, Grover. Mike, go ahead.
Grover, you're spot on. And if you look at one of the major issues that affects us in Kansas City, it's what we call suburban sprawl. It's if a developer wants to put in a subdivision, they go to a vacant lot somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and they build that, and we got to build roads to it and bridges to it and fire service and fiber optic line. It's a huge issue for us. So let's look at what rail transit does. What rail transit does and what all the mayors have decided to do is look at what Portland has done. You want to do exactly what Grover's talking about. You want to promote development in these major areas, brownfields, areas where people have moved out, where you have lack of density, where there should be density. One of the things that accomplishes that just by inertia is rail transit. People want to live around these lines. And so what you do is you begin to backfill development around those areas and develop around those lines. And historically, and almost invariably, these are Main Street areas in South Kansas City or in Kansas City or in Independence, where people have moved out at some level to the suburbs, but you bring them back in. But that's also a legal component. If you look at what Portland has done, and Portland has done so many things right, when we looked at the success model of Portland, one of the things they talked about was it's not just the rails, which in and of itself is going to create some density and solve some of what Grover's talking about and the problem we have. Beyond that, all the mayors have agreed that what we are going to do is create a broader zoning board. And think about how historic this is for our city, right? If all this comes to pass, a broader zoning board that doesn't allow that developer to build in that greenfield, that farmland out in the middle of nowhere, we're going to backfill them brownfields first, unless the broader board authorizes it for some unusual reason. So what that does is, strong word, it constricts or restricts growth in the outlying areas and promotes growth along the old growth corridors of Independence, Kansas City, Raytown, Grandview, Kansas City, and does so in a way that nothing else we have can do.
You know, I'm still confused. How many different commuter lines are you talking about here? What's the total number of lines that your plan would provide?
Total number of commuter lines is three. It's the one that runs from essentially downtown Kansas City through Independence, Blue Springs, Oak Grove, Grand Valley. Then you have what we call the Southeast Line, which runs from downtown Kansas City, past the stadiums, through Raytown to Lee Summit and beyond. Then you have the South Line, which runs through essentially downtown Kansas City through South Kansas City to Grandview. Those are the three routes that we're currently studying.
Where does that line out south run? I can help picture it here.
And I'll tell you what we need to do is there is a study that's going on right now to determine what routes are available and what that would look like. But essentially, it's the old KCS route and some of these commuter routes that run through South Kansas City, run by Swope Parkway. We'd have to take you out and physically show you. It runs by the way, Bannister Mall, an area that I think we need some development, right?
Yeah.
And then
right.
Runs out to Grandview and beyond. I mean, all those routes are very attractive. And by the way, the new GSA.
And the rail's already there. That's the point here, right?
Rails are there. The routes are there. You don't need EPA studies. We're not tied up for 10 years in federal court looking at these routes. It's therefore a tenth an eighth of what it costs to build these routes anywhere else in the United States because the routes are there. The corridors are there. In many cases, the tracks are there. You've got railroad bridges that are potentially there that you can utilize and refurbish.
You know, the other issue, it strikes me, Mike, is you're asking for a 1 cent increase in the sales tax if, in fact, this proposal goes forward. The plan is not on the table yet. That's a big bite of the apple, Mike.
It is a big bite of the apple, but let me tell you, this is not just the construction. It's the operating. It's the expansion in the future. It's everything under one roof. You know, what we wanted to make sure
is no operating deficit going forward.
Absolutely. And once again, we want to learn from what other cities have done right and what other cities have done wrong. St. Louis example, what they do wrong. They had the money to operate, but they had to come back and ask for more money at a later date because they couldn't operate the thing. So they built it but couldn't operate it. Nashville, sales tax are taxed to ultimately build, but by gosh, they couldn't operate it. Well, we don't want to be there. We want to learn from those examples and say we could, theoretically, with that 1 cent sales tax in the current bond market, do this entire project potentially on our own. We're certainly going to have the operating. We're certainly going to have the capital side, trails, buses, all that under one roof. Ultimately, that's what we want to make sure we do, so we're never coming back asking for more money.
Let's go to Gary from Lewisburg. Gary, you're on with Jackson County Executive Mike Sanders. Good morning.
Mike Sanders, thank you so much for talking about the subject. I have a question if you've had any studies with this expansion problems that they've had with eminent domain issues. In addition, with the 1% sales tax, is there any other alternative to raise revenue? And lastly, how are you financially compensated if this project goes through or not?
You blanked out.
Last question. Say it again, Gary.
Sure. How are you financially compensated should the project go through or not? Second, have you had any eminent domain?
Got a bit of domain. Yeah, got eminent domain.
Yep.
And yeah, got other revenue. How is the county financially compensated?
No, him himself.
Me? None. Oh, this is my job. This is what I do. I don't get a nickel out of this, if that's your question. So, not at all.
Are there any alternatives except for raising the taxes by 1%?
Yeah, got it. And so I'll do a great question. The other two questions, currently on the books, if you want to try and raise revenue. And by the way, in this community and other communities, you have other ways of raising taxes. They raise, whether it's gas taxes or property taxes or property tax levies. In this community, sales tax is the one vehicle to get that done. We have 1 cent capacity, which was passed by state statute, both in Kansas and Missouri. That's our vehicle to get that done. In terms of eminent domain, that's a great question. That's why use of commuter rail corridors are so critical. If you're running commercial traffic on it now, there is no eminent domain issue. We're not running through someone's backyard or front yard or someone's house or dealing with the issues that other cities have had to deal with. These commuter corridors are there. We purchase those rights-of-ways from the rail corridors, and ultimately you can start running those trains, therefore, fairly quickly. And you're not wrapped up in court for 10 years with not just eminent domain, but EPA, environmental impact studies, eminent domain issues, any of that.
Yeah, how much political support do you have for this, Mike, when it comes to the Jackson County Legislature, when it comes to the Kansas City Council? Where are those bodies when it comes to this plan?
Thus far, been unanimous. Unanimous support from the county legislature, unanimous support from the city council in terms of supporting the plan, supporting what we're doing. You know, we've had transit education groups that have gone forward, funding for that, obviously. Thus far, it's been unanimous all the way through.
So between what you're doing and what Mayor Sly James is doing when it comes to the streetcars, there's just an enormous thrust right now that's headed in one direction, which is transit.
Absolutely. And you know what? This is very much a complementary process. What Sly James is doing, the mayor's done, and been an incredibly effective advocate for this in the downtown core of Kansas City. Because, look, the reality is if we're going to bring thousands of people in from the suburbs, all roads lead to Rome, all roads lead to downtown Kansas City, they got to get somewhere once they get there. So that's streetcar combination, streetcar bus service. I mean, these are very complementary projects. So, you know, each works hand in glove. We've been in exact communication with each other about how this would work together. He needs commuter, and commuter needs what he's doing. And so I think both projects work very, very well together and are going to drive economic development and property values in downtown core in a way we haven't seen anything do in my lifetime.
You know, now one issue here is that downtown voters obviously just approved that new tax increase for the streetcar system there. I'm wondering, Mike, wouldn't they get hit twice if this countywide sales tax then comes along?
Absolutely not. You know, what we're going to do is we're going to pick that up. The one commitment that we've made, and we've done this very publicly, you don't want to double tax anybody for this. And by the way, I want to make sure I say again, this is a unique tax in that it isn't just for the capital side, it's for the operating side as well. It's a one-stop shop to get all this stuff done. So it's very unique in terms of what we're going to get done with this one ballot initiative. Trails, rail, buses, and operating for all the above. And so it's very unique and why it's 1 cent. Now, with that being said, back to that issue, you don't want to double tax anybody for it. And so what we've committed to do is have that 1 cent rolled into our 1 cent, and we basically eat that, so to speak. They can repeal that 1 cent sales tax, so nobody's double taxed. Now, if you're a resident of Kansas City proper, you know, one complaint you say is, well, the suburbs, the outlying communities never pay for projects in Kansas City. Well, I mean, here we're going to spread the risk. I mean, you're talking voters in Lee Summit and Buckner and Lone Jack and Grain Valley and Grandview are all going to pay potentially for this project. Now's your chance to broaden that perspective, broaden that tax base, and pay for projects that are going to benefit the entire community.
Can you pass it?
You know, all the polling is very, very favorable, Steve. I mean, you know, I don't know that I may not know much, but I know a little bit about politics, and I don't know that I would be here if the polling wasn't very favorable. But here's what I want to say as well. It polls very well in Jackson County, mid-60s, the last time we polled this. But let me tell you where it actually polls even higher, Platte County, Missouri. You look at a rail route to get to KCI, it polled higher in Platte County than any community here. Now, by the way, it's favorable in every community.
But that route's not included in this plan.
Not included because ultimately you're right. It's not our county. It's not Jackson County. It's Platte County. But it makes sense. A rail corridor that goes by Zona Rosa through Riverside potentially gets you to KCI. Gosh, doesn't that just make sense? Right?
Is there one right now?
Well, there's no initiative up there, but there is a route that you can potentially access to get to KCI. And from a broader perspective, this is important for Jackson County. We are what we're talking about, the starter line, so to speak, to use the common political parlance we've used in this community before. But ultimately, it can get bigger. You can go to Clay County, Wyandotte County, Johnson County, KCI. And I think KCI is such a critical component. If you look at luring major conventions, we perpetually talk about what it takes to bring major metropolitan conventions into Kansas City. Time and time again, the issue that we have is without access to transit and easy transit from our airport to downtown, we're not going to land them. You know, in 2007, we brought in the National Association of Counties, right? Very exciting group of individuals. About 10,000 total people came to Jackson County, the largest convention I'm aware of in recent history, right? Maybe there's a bigger one, but there's maybe been one, maybe none. Huge convention for us. We took over Union Station, et cetera. I tell that story to say this. First time I'd ever thought about mass transit. When we're inking that deal to bring them in, I'm talking to the county executive in Detroit who headed the organization up and said, look, we love everything about your community. The renovations of Kauffman were just starting, the great HD video board, the largest of the world at the time. We love the casinos, the restaurants, the hotel space. Everything's great. But
you don't have rail.
And I'm going to leave the expletives out for radio. We are not going to drop 10,000 people and their cats and dogs off at your airport in the middle of expletive nowhere, and just pray to God they find their way downtown. Fix your transit problem, and you've got yourself a convention in Kansas City. So here's what we did. We went out, because we are the National Association, we had a national profile, we raised over $200,000 to rent buses for that week and move people wherever they wanted to go. Once we raised the money, they inked the deal, got a big convention. I'm not real bright, but I was bright enough to figure that out. If you don't have mass transit or rail transit or some way to move people to and from, people aren't going to come to this community. You don't have that kind of profit margin with most conventions.
Let's grab a call here from Paul from Prairie Village. Paul, good morning.
Thanks, guys. Mike, you're talking about commuter rail systems in Portland and in Denver, but those aren't commuter rail systems. Those are light rail systems, which are way different from commuter rail. And the stuff that's commuter is the stuff like in Chicago and Boston, which doesn't lend itself to the kind of development that commuter rail, that light rail does. And I love your payback of $3 of investment per dollar spent, but that's on light rail. I'd be interested to know your thoughts on how you develop some of these commuter rail lines, because the ones you're talking about, you know, past Bannister Mall and Allied 70, those things are in pretty grim industrial areas that are not likely to be redeveloped into anything, let alone cool, you know, commuter rail or light rail type stations and retail like that. Okay. I'd love to know your thoughts on that.
Sure. Yeah, very simple question.
What is the difference between light rail and commuter rail? Begin with that.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, nothing. Okay. And let's just be very honest here. It's a term used in the industry that, frankly, is a distinction without a difference. Give you an example. If we could all get in a plane and fly down to Dallas and ride the commuter rail routes in Dallas, right, which I think is getting it right in so many ways, and if I blindfolded you and put you on a commuter rail route in Dallas, and I'll tell you the legal difference here in a second, a commuter rail route in Dallas or a light rail route somewhere else, Steve, you couldn't tell the difference. Drives the same, feels the same, sounds the same. There is no difference. What's the legal difference? Light rail has huge eminent domain issues. It's where you're running this heavy rail track down some suburban area or knocking down houses to get there. That's light rail, right? Same performance characteristics as commuter rail. And with the new generation models, and by the way, the first major generation model is going to go in Sonoma, Marin County, right? Very green, biodiesel, et cetera. But you're running on existing track in terms of how fast it runs, how quickly it runs. There's no distinction between light and commuter rail. It's really a distinction of the type of track that it runs on.
Well, can light rail run on existing heavy rail tracks?
Of course not. No. And so that's the deal. If you want to do – what's the major difference between light rail and commuter rail? Probably about $135 million a mile. We can't afford light rail in this community. I mean, if you want to build 43 miles of light rail line, which, by the way, runs as fast as commuter rail, is going to go to the same places as commuter rail, we're all going to go to the downtown areas, you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of about $6 billion. I want someone to tell me, well, we've got $6 billion just laying around here in this community to build a system. It can't be done. Mm-hmm. What we've got, though, in this community, which nobody else has, is we've got these commuter rail routes, some of which are abandoned, right, that are there, that, and I'm going to get to this gentleman's other question here in just a second, that we can run these routes on, do it very economically feasibly, that you can't do anywhere else because we've got these contiguous routes that are available to us because of the railroads. Two of the 13 largest railroads in the United States are headquartered right basically centrally here and are willing to give us this type of access. You can't do that anywhere else in the United States. So he points to Portland. Well, the commuter rail routes, in quotes, right, in suburban Portland is basically that, a small city in the middle of nowhere to a small city in the middle of nowhere. Well, yeah, and it didn't really go anywhere and no one really wants to ride it. I got it. You're not going to have great economic development around those routes. But what do we have here? You've got the train can stop whenever it wants to stop. It can go wherever you want it to go. It's going to downtown metropolitan areas, downtown Independence, and all these areas. You talk to the mayors in these outlying areas, whether it's Independence, Blue Springs, Grandview, they've already got transit-oriented development plans where they think it's going to absolutely blow up. Around the Bannister Mall, he's right. We've been talking in this community about how are we going to develop Bannister Mall. There are developers right now that say, you put these routes in, we're going to develop that area. There are plans already in place. So esoterically, I get his question. But frankly, that type of analysis just doesn't apply to Kansas City. It's not going to apply to us. I think that you've already got plans in place to ultimately get that development done, and this is going to be an incredible project for us.
We're going to have to leave it there, Mike. Come back in late March or early April when you make a decision here, and we'll talk some more about this. Lots of calls we can't get to today. People obviously very interested in what you're talking about.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
That's Jackson County Executive Mike Sanders. Coming up, a look at the Kansas legislature and some interesting activity over there that a couple of political scholars want to address. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date KCUR.